We kick off hour number two of the program. It's Three and Out. It's brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Check them out online at tvacreditunion.com. That's how you can become a member. It only takes $5. Put that into an account, and you are all set up with the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. They're celebrating 85 years serving their members here in East Tennessee, and they'd love for you to join as well. And they've got over 20 branches right here in East Tennessee, so you can just walk in or check them out online at tvacreditunion.com. Who do you blame for Tennessee allowing a 25-point comeback?
I know everyone wants to say Rick Barnes, but, man, like, he's not turning it over. 10 turnovers and a half. Give me a break, man. Like, well, I don't know how we keep doing that. This team has been so good all year with the basketball, and it's just like sometimes they stop thinking. And I felt like that's what happened against Iowa. I feel like that's what happened the last 10 minutes of the first half against Auburn in the SEC championship game and then into the second half. I just don't understand how a team that's so veteran and so smart just blows the ball to the other team so many times.
I'm with you, and I don't understand it because Tennessee has personnel. Usually teams that are bad at handling the ball.
Yeah, they don't have good guard play.
Are bigger or, yeah, their personnel doesn't fit that. Tennessee has a guy in Jordan Bone who is faster than everybody on the court with the ball. There's no, like, you can't. It's not like he's easy to contain and trap and mess with that way. Lamonte Turner handles the ball fine for the most part, like most of the game. Grant Williams is talked about how great a passer he is generally, but in these stretches, he's usually part of the problem too. This is a dude, a post player who in the open court, Euro stepped a guy for a 3-point play during an earlier part of the game. But in these lull moments.
I just got an email from 1-800-CONTACTS.
Nice.
That's how you stay on it.
Your social media is listening to you do the show.
I guess so.
Through your computer.
Interesting.
I mean, Admiral Schofield is like plays post sometimes, but is basically an oversized guard. Like, he handles the ball fine. You generally only have one traditional post guy on the floor at a time that, like, isn't a ball handler. This team doesn't project as a team that would struggle with pressure. Like, this team isn't. I mean, the best example this year would be when Duke started pressing Louisville, and Louisville, like, did not know what to do with the basketball.
Right.
Tennessee should not be one of those teams. But they've. And what's weird, like, it makes a little more sense against Auburn, who's more guards. They're everywhere. Their defensive pressure, it's what
super
they
quick,
do.
Yeah.
This is a Big Ten team in Iowa that's obviously playing hard because their tournament life, their season's on the line. But still, just take care of the basketball. It should not be that difficult. There's a stretch I was looking at in the second half where it was like an Iowa score, and then it just says Tennessee turnover. I don't even remember what that play was. There was one where I think Bone just threw it straight out of bounds because he thought Alexander was doing one thing and he did another.
Yeah, you had two cutters coming to the paint, and I guess they saw each other and both stopped, so nobody kept running. And either one of them keeps running, and it's probably a dunk.
Then there was then Iowa scores again, another turnover. Then Iowa scores again. I mean, you weren't even getting shots up.
No, I mean, that's what happened against Auburn. You had 10 possessions, 9 turnovers. You're not even getting the opportunity to get fouled or get a shot up because you are giving the ball back to the other team. I mean, essentially, every time you turn it over, it's and the other team scores. I mean, that's kind of a 4-point swing. Because theoretically, I mean, or more, I'm just saying, you know, you should be at least getting a 2-point attempt.
Well, there's some, okay, yeah, there's some expected value anytime you shoot, right?
Yeah.
So it's.
So like 1.22 points per possession, right?
Something like
so,
that.
Yeah.
So you, it's.
Yeah. You're, it's when you're, a 3. When you're not even getting the shot up, it's like, well, damn. Especially when we're as efficient on offense as we are, typically. I said typically.
Also, I mean, I feel like you didn't go through Grant during those stretches, and part of it is this team gets used to not going through Grant when they're bombing threes and playing well and playing in transition like they do in the first half. But if you're going to go to a more slowed down tempo in the second, you have to make it a point to go inside. Like that's where the shots come easier around the basket against set defense. That's just the way it goes. You might get wide open transition threes if you're running up and down, and more wide open attacks at the basket if you're going up and down. But if you're going against set defense, Grant Williams at the rim is, or even with a guy in between him and the rim, is generally your best option, and they showed that in overtime. So to me, that was a problem with the way the team ran their offense. I did hear a quote from Rick Barnes as they set up the matchup, where he said, "Earlier in my days, I used to try and joystick it too much. I realized you got to trust your players and you've got to kind of let them play." So that's obviously part of what's going on here with the fact that your tempo slows down, but your team doesn't really understand where to take great shots in that situation. But, like, I don't know. Is Rick Barnes not joysticking enough here? Because obviously, they've gone through these big stretches where Grant Williams doesn't get enough touches and they can't score.
I thought Iowa did a really good job of doubling Grant the moment he caught the ball, and they did a really good job of not letting him catch it deep. The difference was, in overtime, we spread the floor and really let Grant kind of ISO. It was almost impossible for Iowa to double and help the way they were in, you know, regulation. And that's why he was able to get those four quick points. And then they switched back and tried to double him. Okay, well, that didn't work. So now double him. And he kicks out to Bone, and Bone hits the deep three. It just kind of worked out. But I thought Iowa's defense against Grant was really, really good early. And I think that was what led you to, you know, you're hitting threes, you're out in transition. And then when we wanted to slow down, they were still doing a pretty good job on Grant. And when that happened, when we slow down and the other team's doing a good job on Grant, bad things tend to happen. That's what Kentucky did at Kentucky, right? That's what Auburn did at Auburn. They were doing a really good job of just denying Grant the basketball. It's what they did in the SEC tournament. And unless we are just burying threes and getting good looks, and specifically not turning it over, we just go into this weird, like, okay, am I allowed to shoot the three? Because they're guarding Grant real good. I know we want to get it in there. Okay, I'll just try turnover. Okay, well, we'll reverse the ball real quick, and then we'll try to get it in there. Oh, the guy's not ready for the reverse turnover. I thought Iowa did a pretty good job on Grant until overtime.
I got a DM from a listener. Says, Barnes' lack of adjustments to counter the opponents is infuriating, and despite how much I love our players, none of them has that killer mentality. I don't know about that. I think they get that killer mentality, then they lose it for some reason.
That's what's
then
weird.
It comes, like, and goes.
They come out with a killer mentality in both games, and they're up, you know, 16, 17 against Colgate. They're up 25 against Iowa, and then you're channeling a bunch of killers. Hey, stop being killers. Chill.
Admiral channeled it late against Colgate. I know we haven't gotten into it, but his decision to basically bench himself at the end of Iowa.
I didn't love the shot, but I didn't have a big problem with the shot.
Well, we'll get into that in a minute. Let's get to the phone lines. Let's grab Roberto real quick before the break. What's up, Berto?
Good morning, guys.
Morning, bud.
First of all, Houston, thank you for putting up with me yesterday.
Cheers,
really,
buddy.
Appreciate it.
Glad you were there. Glad you're not a bad luck at Oakmont. you're allowed to come back now.
Alberto's undefeated at Elkmont, for the record.
Damn Skippy.
He's never lost when I've been there.
Ain't never lost.
Yesterday was so weird. And, guys, I think postseason Rick Barnes is in full effect. But I think postseason Rick Barnes is maybe just Rick Barnes. And hear me all the way through on this. Okay? During the season, you get a pretty good scout on every team you're going to play, okay? And typically you're going to play almost all those teams twice, okay? I think we're great pregame scouters of teams, okay? I think we can break teams down really well and know what they don't do well and attack it. And that's why, if you look at Tennessee, forgive my ignorance, guys, have we only not led at halftime like three games all season, four maybe? Maybe?
Yeah, it's rare we go into halftime with a deficit.
But then halftime adjustments happen. And I just don't think Rick Barnes – I think postseason, we all call it postseason Rick Barnes, and I know you broke it down last week, Houston, I listened, but nonetheless, quote-unquote, postseason Rick Barnes is maybe just Rick Barnes. He's just not a good in-game adjuster coach. And this whole not calling timeout and letting the boys just play it out, guys, it's tired on me. That drum has been beaten to death for me. Are you guys with me on that? I haven't heard your comment on that this morning.
Yeah, yeah. He's got to take more control. I appreciate the let them play mentality. It does. He's trying to kind of be a little Bruce Pearl and like give the guys confidence to take ownership of the team and that's I think that has helped these guys play with supreme confidence at times and be as good as they were in like the first half yesterday. But at some point you gotta help your college kids handle the emotions of these environments, and by taking a timeout to stop momentum or by calling a quick hitter so that you get your best player a touch in the right spot in a key moment is that's coaching. And I don't know. I think he's trying to kind of walk that balance line, and sometimes it burns him.
Well, and Nate, I think every comment you made is spot on there. I also think, was there not a stretch yesterday in 6 or 7 possessions, I lost count, that we had 5 turnovers? I mean, yeah. And he didn't call a damn timeout. Like, really? Really? I get letting him play. And part of that, I'll actually give a nod to Rick Barnes. During the season, he let him play it out and maybe even take an L. Like Kentucky, basically, was one of those games where he just kept letting them play it out and just get their face pounded in, and they needed that, okay? And I think at the end of games, we are supremely confident that we're going to win every game. I feel like Tennessee never felt like they were going to lose that game.
I agree.
And that's good as a fan to see. Those boys are always confident at the end of games. And we went to overtime. I was like, this is going to be really, 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 really bad or really, 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 really good, especially when Admiral wasn't playing. And you know what? It just turned out. I mean, their second best player on the team did not play 1 second of overtime, right? I didn't see him in there for 1 second. And yet they just totally dominated because they started letting him push the pace just a little bit more in overtime. And that was just it at the beginning of the game, guys. Was the narrative not it's Tennessee's speed and quickness and agility versus Iowa's toughness and three-point shooting ability? And in the first half, that's what you saw. And then Rick Barnes played right into their hands. And I guess it's because maybe he wanted to slow the game down and maybe rest the starters or kind of pace the starters or something. What you do is you go get a 40-freaking-point lead, and that's when you just put the starters on the bench.
Yeah.
And that's how maybe we as fans see it, and he doesn't. I don't really know. It's odd. But, hey, I'm going to be positive. We're on to the Sweet 16 with arguably our two worst second-half performances of the season, and we're still in the tournament. There's nothing but positive to be taken from that for me as a fan, because I think that if we put two halves together of basketball, looking at every team in the tournament that has played, even Duke, as we saw last night, they didn't have their best game last night. I think if Tennessee throws together two great halves of basketball, I don't know if there's a team that can beat them right now.
Thanks for the call, Berto. The good news is you saw how good Tennessee can be and that they are able to be that way in the NCAA tournament. I mean, it's not, you know, the lights aren't too bright for Tennessee in the NCAA tournament. They came out and they just whooped Iowa's ass for the whole first half. And these lulls they go through just need to be shorter. Like, every team has them. I mean, I remember Bruce Pearl's teams here at Tennessee, and I would think, man, they really only dominated this game for 10 minutes out of the 40. But it didn't matter because they dominated so well in the 10 minutes, and they were even. Yep. They're roughly even, maybe a little even minus over the other 30. But it didn't matter because in those 10 minutes, they were basically 20 points better.
Right.
And they just won by 9 because – And I'm talking about in big, huge games. Like, basically, for 10 minutes, they were 20 points better, and the rest of the game, they were about 1 point worse every 5. Like, this Tennessee team this year can be that way when they get out and run. You just can't go into such a shell. I mean, there's one other option here, is that Rick Barnes is allowing the players to play the way they kind of want to play because that's his kind of his older Rick Barnes thing, and he feels like that's the best way to coach a group like this. And that the players took the foot off the gas too much. But that's still a coaching thing. That's still a guy. You got to call a timeout and say, guys, we can't milk the clock for 20 minutes. You guys, we need to push pace and continue to be aggressive here. And either way, like, he needs, they need more help in these types of situations. I'm with you. It's not all on Rick Barnes, but it's not all on the players either. It's a team game. Coaches, players, I think Rick and the other coaches would agree with that. Like, everybody needs to do their part. And in the second half, they were all bad yesterday. So hopefully that, you know, you did win. You moved on. So hopefully you can learn some lessons there. I was looking at that stretch Birdo was talking about. Bowden turnover. Derek Walker, turnover. And then Bowden turnover. I mean, it just, like you said, at one point it's 10-1 in the second half with turnovers. To a team that's, like, not pressing you, not run and jump.
They ran like a dummy press. Yeah. But we were turning it over in the half court. Like, that's where we were giving them the ball. Auburn was kind of like anywhere. This game, it was we got into half court offense and just handed Iowa the basketball.
I've got some more in-game coaching questions. Jesse Simonton of VolQuest put out a tweet yesterday that was maybe the harshest criticism of Rick Barnes. I'll read it when we come back, and we'll kind of chew on that for a bit. As Tennessee is into the Sweet 16,
it's like the least celebrated Sweet 16 ever. Just saying. People are like, well, Tennessee made it, but we haven't looked good yet. Like, we are in the Sweet 16.
We are.
One of 16 teams remaining in this tournament. I feel like it's pretty good.
This segment of the program brought to you by the Knoxville Stone Interiors. Knoxville's Stone Interiors. KnoxStoneInteriors.com is the website. They'd love to help you out with your new countertops, whether it's for the kitchen, bathroom, man cave, any place that you need. Granite, quartz, marble, or recycled glass, they got you covered at Knoxville's Stone Interiors. KnoxStoneInteriors.com. You can even get a free quote there on the website. So we talked about it a little bit last week. You guys may have talked about it even more as you headed into Friday about this whole tournament Rick Barnes narrative. I guess that's the best way to put it. You know, he doesn't have the type of record some of, you know, the greats of college basketball have, but he has been coaching at, you know, pretty prestigious schools for a long time. And I think there's some deserved criticism there, but there's also the whole fact that the NCAA tournament is one and done. I mean, even Mike Krzyzewski said it last night. He said, I've been unlucky in the tournament sometimes, and I've been really lucky other times. And I think, there's some element of that. I do think, in my opinion, Rick Barnes could have done things yesterday differently to really help this Tennessee basketball team. And I think it's been something that has plagued the team all year. I don't understand why, from a coaching standpoint, he doesn't try to help the team, give them better opportunities to score when they go through lulls on offense, why he doesn't have slightly different defensive plans for a few games, and why he doesn't take timeouts when the other team goes on these massive runs that we've seen from the best teams on the schedule, and then we saw from Colgate even, and Iowa. Now, having said all that, and kind of back to Houston's point, you are in the Sweet 16, and I think Rick Barnes deserves a ton of credit, deserves all the coaching credit for getting this team to be as good as they've been this year. But just because he's done – so let me say that. Rick Barnes has done a phenomenal job with this basketball team the last two and a half seasons, right? All the way back to the offseason 2 years ago where he said, guys, this isn't cutting it. Like, from that point on where he put his foot down, and a lot of coaches do that, and it never works because either the players aren't any good or the players' attitudes aren't any good or – the coach's attitude really isn't good. They're just hoping that they can turn the corner. But Rick Barnes and these players, all of them, put their foot down kind of for each other and said, this isn't cutting it. We've got to be better. They did that 2.5 years ago, really almost 3 years ago now, and it's been different ever since. And they've been on this path to where they're a team that's 31-5 on the season.
Coach Barnes made it clear that this wasn't just a, I'm going to come here and collect a retirement check. That was kind of the moment where you, at least when we were looking back on it, we can see he didn't just make the decision to just kind of coast through and just finish out his career here. He made the necessary adjustments to get this team to play at a level where you are advancing to a Sweet 16.
He's done a phenomenal job. In fact, when he was hired, I think most people, if you had told them this is where you would be, would have been blown away. It was outside the realm of people's expectations. And he deserves all the coaching credit for that, he and his staff. And these players deserve all the player credit that goes with that. But, and I see some people that see criticism of certain decisions, and they say, well, you can't criticize Coach Barnes. He's all the stuff I just said. But you can do both. And that's what I've always tried to say on this show. A lot of people at our station have always tried to say, like, you can have the best coach in the history of anything and still criticize a decision. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. You don't have to either worship a coach or want him fired. It doesn't have to be that way. Like, if Pat Summitt in her prime made a call and it didn't work out, and she looked back on after the game and goes, you know, we should have called something different. Like, that's okay. And it would have been okay for Houston to point that out, or me, or anybody. Like, it's a sport. You win and you lose. And a lot of times winning is just a product of the other team sucking. And coaches talk about all the time. You want to continue to get better no matter what, how good or how bad the opponent is. You want to try and pursue perfection. So it's fine for us to criticize Rick Barnes and some of the decision-making he's made. I just want to get all that out there, that all the positive stuff is still there. If we criticize one decision Rick Barnes makes, it doesn't mean that all that other stuff goes away. You don't have to worship the coach or want him fired. Everybody should be somewhere in the middle of all that, but it seems like for some reason people on message boards or social media or whatever always run to one of those polls. And to me, it's quite sickening. So anyway, this is what Jesse Simonton tweeted about Rick Barnes. VolQuest.com. Is Rick Barnes the Andy Reid of college hoops? Both terrific coaches. I'm going to say that part again. Both terrific coaches whose lack of in-game adjustment / clock management, parentheses, you have timeouts, Rick, close parentheses, put their teams in peril every postseason. Now, I don't know about the comparison. Maybe that is pretty good. I love Andy Reid. I've always thought he's a really good coach. I've always thought some of the mistakes he makes are blown out of proportions because no one notices when Andy Reid throws a shovel pass on first and goal from the two for a touchdown. No one gives him credit for that. Like, if it's first and goal from the two with other teams and they run the ball into the line three times with ISO and they don't get it and they kick a field goal, no one criticizes that coach. No one appreciates the brilliance of Andy Reid to run a pop pass to Tyreek Hill where he walks into the end zone with no one around him. They only bring it up when he tries to throw it at the goal line and gets picked off, right? Or it gets deflected or somebody fumbles or, you know. So, like, there's some of that that goes on with Rick Barnes, too. But, like, seems like some basic decision. We never talked about the fact that Kyle Alexander got his fourth foul in the SEC tournament and then did not get taken out of the game and immediately got his fifth. Mm. Like, that seemed to be, and the announcers agreed, it seemed to be a complete just oversight. We did talk about how Rick Barnes isn't, you know, standing up and into the game as much as some other coaches.
He was yesterday.
We did talk about how he during the season wouldn't light into the officials sometimes when we wanted him to.
He did yesterday. He listened to the show.
So,
gotta be.
I mean, I don't know. I think there is very fair criticism of Rick Barnes today from the game yesterday. And I think he's a good enough coach where he's probably doing some self-critique himself. Who, like, all good coaches do that. I think he's trying to balance letting his guys play the game in a way where they'll play it to the best of their ability so he's not reining them in too much. But I think sometimes that gets this team in trouble because you let the players almost have too much say in the way things go, and you need to just kind of refocus them, reshape the feeling of the team.
It's tough to say that, though, when we don't really know what's happening. I mean,
Yeah, like, what did they say at halftime?
Right.
Did they say, all right, guys, we
like
got
that,
a big
that's
lead?
What I'm saying. Like, without knowing what the message was. Now, if you want to say he should have called the timeout earlier, yeah, I'll give you that, I think. And if you want to say, well, the, you know, the last play before overtime, you know, we had a chance to draw something up there and we got like a one pass 3-point. Okay, like that wasn't like great. It was still an open look by a guy who hit that shot on the very next attempt he took. If you want to talk like, you know, subbing in Fulkerson and Pons at the same time.
You said all year, you're worried about the rotation.
I was worried about the rotation. But in the first half, those two guys out there were pretty good. Like, they were locking people down. They were hustling. They were getting steals. They were getting loose balls. Pons had a wide-open dunk, but he traveled. Those are the kind of things that happen. Someone tweeted this in earlier. I'm going to see if I can find it. I want to give credit. It does always seem like when Fulkerson's in, like Fulkerson, Pons, and a lot of times even Kyle Alexander, they're never ready for a pass when it comes from, like, Bone or Bowden.
I think it's primarily because Bone does a great job of looking off the defender.
Did you see the floater he hit? How he no-looked two guys and got them running the opposite directions on like fake passes and lookoffs, and then he just hits a little floater. I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, he's amazing at that. It is still, however, more amazing to me that at this point in the season, when Fulkerson, even Alexander, and Pons are wide open and Bone has the ball, they're still not thinking, yeah, he might be able to get it to me right here. Like, it's just, it is kind of wild to me. So maybe, again, that's the rotation thing I was talking about. But I don't know, man. Like, no top 100 players. This is the school's eighth ever Sweet 16. You've had 16-plus point leads in both of these games. Like, it's almost like we need a better opponent so that we don't have to take our foot off the gas.
You're going
to
get that.
Yeah, you're, and that's the thing. So maybe after Purdue, I'll know more about, like, what I'm seeing. Now, I don't care who it is. If you have a 25-point lead, you shouldn't blow that. And obviously, certainly in the SEC or NCAA tournament. But maybe if we're never in the position to just stop playing the way we're playing, maybe instead of having a team come back, you just kind of push the lead out to, you know, 16, 17, 18 towards the end of the game, and everyone's like, wow, this Tennessee team's pretty good. It's just weird that it's almost like our early success in the first two games has been our downfall. That's what's strange to me. It was the same against Auburn at Auburn and in the SEC tournament. We built, I think, 11 or 12-point lead at Auburn. We built a 9-point lead in the SEC tournament, and then something changes where I don't know if we're trying to change our game plan or the other team adjusts and we fail to counter. I don't know, but early success seems to be our problem, which is very weird to me.
You've done that in other games that weren't very significant either, like the Texas A&M game comes to mind. You got up like 28-11 at one point, and they managed to come back
and
make it a game.
That's right. Mississippi State up here. I know we ended up winning that game senior night by 16, but I think they pushed it out to 15, and it was 5 or 4 at halftime. Roberto was right, by the way. I think we've only trailed at the half 3 times. Florida, Auburn in the SEC tournament, and Ole Miss. I think that's it.
Were you up on Kansas at halftime?
You were. You were up on Kansas. You were up on Gonzaga. Up on Memphis, Wake, Georgia Tech. I went back and looked. They were up. Oh, Kentucky at Rupp was another one, if I didn't throw that one in there. So there might be 4.
Has it happened in every game, though, where, like, I mean, you mentioned the games you get up big, team comes back some, you still win. Games you've been even, a lot of times you have a lull and the other team pulls away and you lose. Like, is it just that this team always
has... I mean,
you've
only lost 5 games.
Is it just that this team has a bad stretch in every basketball game?
You also have to say that the other teams are having bad stretches. And if Tennessee's winning 31 and losing 5, basketball is kind of a game of runs anyway. And, you know, it was SEC play, and it was teams like, you know, Gonzaga, Memphis, Kansas. I mean, yeah, like, teams are going to go on runs, sure. I don't know if that necessarily means – I don't know if saying Tennessee has a bad stretch in every game is quite the fair way to say that. Because that means that in the majority of these games, they had that stretch, but then they had 2 or 3 of their own that were – you know, infinitely better. But, I mean, I don't think there's a team in the country that's going to come out and play just 40 perfect minutes and win 35 every game. I mean, it's going to happen.
It just seems like Tennessee's are more like this instead of, like, they're so good that it make and then so bad.
That's like, what I'm saying. Like,
that's what's strange about
it. And normally we start good. Normally. I would say maybe at Rupp is the one exception.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, I haven't gone into a game at halftime this year, with the exception of Rupp, and thought, we are in deep bleep. Maybe Auburn in the SEC tournament. Although I think at the, because I think at the half that one was like 11 or 9 or something. So I didn't feel great about that one. So two games you've gone into the half kind of being like, eh, not great. But I don't know, man. These two specifically, I don't know if it's the opponent. Like if it's just like, oh, it's Colgate, it's Iowa. It's not very easy to motivate yourself once you're drubbing somebody. Like you kind of like, yeah, these guys do stink. We don't have to play this hard anymore. I don't know what it is.
I don't know.
But it's weird that it's early success that causes us to kind of shell up and slow down. It's almost like, damn, Iowa, like hit a couple more weird threes so we can just keep our foot on the gas instead of, because you know McCaffrey went in at halftime and just lit those boys up,
yeah,
right. And I don't know what happened at halftime for Tennessee. I don't know if Rick Barnes was in there like, okay, good job, just kind of keep going, keep pushing, let's get to the Sweet 16. But you know that McCaffrey was over there peeling paint and like throwing stuff. So is that a case where Iowa just came out with their hair on fire and we kind of came out thinking status quo? Same with Colgate. Is that, I mean, I don't know. Is that what's happening? Are we going into halftime and it's like, well, you played a damn good first half, guys. Just keep it up. And it's kind of like, oh, okay. That's not, I'm just saying keep it up is not like the most motivating form of a halftime speech. But I don't know what, like, you can't be throwing stuff and screaming if you're Rick Barnes when you go into the half up 21. It looks fake. It doesn't seem real.
Yeah, Patrick says Grant said in the postgame interview that they slowed down the second half. He thinks that has to be a coaching decision. Maybe. Couple that with foul trouble and numerous turnovers, boom, the lead is gone. I mean, it's... I watched tons of teams get out to big leads this weekend. No one was Jekyll and Hyde as much as Tennessee. No one. Not even some of these other lower-seeded teams that aren't as good at basketball. So I don't know. If this was a young team, this would make perfect sense. That's the maddening thing for me. This is the oldest, to me, the most seasoned team in college basketball. Maybe that's not 100% true, but to me it feels that way. Like this should be, you have such smart guys on this team. They've played a ton of basketball. They played postseason basketball. They talked about how the Loyola game last year is their motivation. And I don't know. Maybe, you know, the other team that comes to mind is Virginia. They're a bunch of seasoned guys, and they, you know, they kind of have trouble too. Maybe we talked about this off the air the other day after the show one day. Sometimes when you're a real like smart athlete, you can almost overthink it. Virginia's like losing to the 16 seed again over the weekend, you know? And then like maybe they almost tell themselves, we're up big. Make sure we keep pushing. Make sure we keep pushing. And they tighten up and they miss shots and they start turning it over.
Maybe Rick Barnes needs to take the pedal off, or you know, whatever I'm trying to say. Like throttle down, lighten up with 5 minutes to go, let the other team make a little bit bigger run so that you can go in at halftime and chew some ass. Instead of waiting till halftime to say, good job, boys, let's take it easy. Give them 5 minutes of crap coaching before the half and then dog them for it.
I don't think it's an easy mind answer, games. Though. I think everybody that's trying to boil this down to one thing and put it all on one thing, if it was one thing, it'd be easy to fix.
It's weird, too. Like because this team doesn't panic, it almost makes it worse because I feel like some teams that are this good, when they kind of panic, you snap yourself back into, oh, yeah, we got to do it the right way. This team's just kind of like, eh, we're okay. Yeah, it was 25 and now it's 15. We're fine. Yeah, it was 15 and now it's 7. We're good. Yeah, it was 7 and now we're tied, but we're Tennessee. We got this.
Yeah, we get the last shot. I don't know. It. It's an enigma. Like it, you can't figure this out. You just can't. I'm hoping they're good enough that if they play kind of good and bad like this, you know, maybe against maybe they're good enough to put big runs on Purdue.
They are. They're good enough to put big runs on anybody.
But maybe in bigger games against tougher teams, those big runs aren't so big, so it stays more of a, kind of like you mentioned, more of a tense game for 40 minutes, and maybe they give a 40-minute more consistent performance. Because that's really what we're talking about. They're just inconsistent.
I just got a text. I think it's a pretty good point. It says Schofield was on the bench for 15 minutes of the 40, and with him being your emotional lead, like, what's the correlation to Schofield on the floor or off the floor and the differential in points? I need to know that. Like, is that what it is when he gets in foul trouble or what gets benched for? I mean, obviously overtime was a little bit different, but when he's on the bench with foul trouble, is that the issue? Because he is. Everyone says he's the spark plug. He's the emotional leader, the floor general, so on and so forth. Is that it? When he picks up three weird fouls and has to sit for 15 minutes, things just get discombobulated.
I don't think necessarily because then the lineups do get
kind of weird when he's off the floor.
To start the second half, him missing jump shots was a big reason why Iowa started the comeback. So I think it's not so much that he's off the floor, it's just how he's playing. If Admiral Schofield's playing well, the team rarely has issues.
Oh, we definitely go as he goes.
Yeah.
Typically. Especially against good teams.
I feel like Grant,
the good news is he's been really good against most good teams and in big games.
Grant's a little bit of the opposite because he is more consistent, and sometimes in games where the team plays poorly, Grant picks up slack and tries to carry the team. So if Admiral's hitting threes and playing well, it's usually over for the opponent. So I don't know if it's him in the game. I mean, obviously that would make your point for you. In addition to both those things will be true. If he's out of the game or not playing well, then they're going to have a rough half. They had a really rough half. So when we come back, we'll get into maybe what happened or didn't happen with him late in the game, because that's kind of a weird feel-good story, I guess. I mean, it was great the way they played in overtime.
It's a feel-weird story.
It's pretty amazing they played so well half one, so poorly half two, and then right back to being what looked like one of the best teams in the country in overtime. They did get the win. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about the ending of the game right here on 3 and Out. Final segment, hour number two of the program. I'm going to talk a little bit about the end of the Iowa-Tennessee game. You know, I was listening to the Westwood One broadcast that we have for you right here on Fan Run Radio. We've got it through the app. We're streaming it at foxsportsknoxville.com. We're the exclusive provider of March Madness right here in the Knoxville market for you. So if you want to listen to some of the games coming up Thursday, Friday, if you can't watch and you want just to have the audio, you can stream it through the app, through the website, or on the radio, of course, as well. We are your home for March Madness here at WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville. So I'm listening to the Westwood One guys call the game, and of course they're, you know, as unbiased as it gets. In the second half, they're pointing out how Tennessee's like, there a foul's called, and Tennessee doesn't even, like, huddle up like every team in college basketball does. And at one point, they even said a guy made a free throw, and no one even high-fived him, which is really weird. I mean, Bone makes free throws on technical fouls and high fives air people.
True.
So it's very strange that that Tennessee kind of got away from that togetherness that they usually show. And Houston and I were talking about during the break. I mean, one theory I have is that they know they shouldn't let up, and they tell themselves over and over. And he mentioned even Admiral coming out and being really trying to stay really upbeat and positive and stay on the guys to start the second half. But I almost think that they're such smart basketball players. They know they can't let up. They know they shouldn't let up, but that makes them press. And then when they're open, when they have a wide open three, they just can't get it to go down. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's not. But I did want to get to the end of the game with Admiral Schofield. You were getting some interaction from the audience about how he's the emotional leader of the team. And when he's either out of the game or kind of flat emotionally, the team goes flat. So the fact that he didn't play in overtime is a huge story here. After the game, Rick Barnes and
team
Admiral
didn't look flat, though, in fairness.
It's true.
Not in overtime.
He's going crazy on the bench. Maybe Admiral should coach the team. Maybe that's Can he be player coach?
Can he do halftime chat?
Yeah. Maybe
fireside with Admiral.
When Admiral's not in the game, he can be the bench coach.
Get your ass in gear with Admiral Schofield.
If Barnes stays seated, can Admiral stand up and pace the sidelines? Like, can you tag in and out with that?
He needs to put, like, a different colored shirt on. I don't need us passing to the bench.
Just hand him a suit coat. He just throws a suit coat on over the thing and just paces up and down in his uniform. And then he's ready to check back in, just takes the suit coat off.
I'm putting myself in, Coach. I'm checking back in. Coach Admiral here, making a call.
I wonder if he would have asked to go back in the game. All right, if he missed the story, Admiral says after the game that the reason he didn't play in overtime was he told Coach Barnes to leave Kyle in the game because with four fouls, Admiral Schofield didn't feel like he could defend the way he wanted to, and Kyle had done a good job and would be better on the defensive end. So that's why they rolled without Admiral Schofield in overtime, and of course, once things started going well, there was no real need to put him back in the game.
Late, Kyle was good.
Yeah.
And so was Grant, even with the four fouls. I thought Grant did a nice job of playing very smart defense with the four fouls, because he had like two blocks and a steal, or maybe two steals with four fouls. Like when it was
crazy.
When it was needed the most, he defended the best. You know, vertical on his jumps, hands completely straight up, swatting at the ball, not getting hand. Like, he did a great job. Now, do we really? We think he got benched, Admiral, for the three, right? Like, we think initially Rick Barnes was like, "You're coming out of the game. We're trying to take this thing down." Was it tied at that point?
No,
you were up two.
Tennessee had the lead. Tennessee was up two.
Up two. Admiral takes a three after burning 5 seconds off the shot clock, under a minute.
There was 21 seconds on the shot clock, 41 on the game shot when he let it go.
I mean, he's just trying to go two for one.
That makes no sense when you have the lead. The announcers even talked about that.
Well, it made sense at the end when it was tied, though, didn't it? Yeah, you got the last shot. Smart.
Going two for one only matters – it always matters at the end of the half, because obviously the game's not going to be won or lost then. You should always go two for one at the end of the half. Rick Barnes never does. And at the end of the game, if you have the lead, you don't need to go two for one, because if you miss, they're going to have the basketball down. And when they have the basketball down at the end of the game, they're not going to wait till the last second to shoot. They're not going to hold for the last shot down.
Mm. But then if they hit a three, you're down. Smart play by Admiral.
So going two for one doesn't matter. Now, having said all that, I still want to take the first great shot I get. I don't want to run that. You still don't want to run the shot clock down to one and take some awful three. So I don't have a problem with Admiral's shot at all.
I thought it wasn't
going two for one. Like, that's just wrong.
Nate, I'm kidding about the two for one, obviously.
I know you but are, but everybody has said that. And it's just, I just want to make sure.
Oh, I really hadn't seen anybody say that.
Everybody's saying that. The Westwood One guy said that, and he's wrong.
Everybody's wrong.
You don't go two for one with the lead late because the other team is going to shoot as soon as they get the ball, because they want as many opportunities to try and come back.
I'll say I did not have a problem with the shot.
I didn't.
Until he missed it. That's Crest coaching.
That's the other thing, though. The time doesn't really matter there. They're going to get the ball back with 20 seconds minimum. Your main concern on that possession is to score. And the best way to score is to take the best shot you're going to get within the 30-second shot clock. And I would argue that wide-open three from Admiral is probably the best shot you're going to get.
That's a good shot.
I mean, they messed up the screen defense and left him wide open.
Wide open. That's what I'm saying. Like, he was wide open. He buried two against Colgate from the corner to ice that one. Like, Peter Burns tweeted yesterday. He's like, Tennessee has five players that I would trust to hit a last second shot. That's probably the one I trust the most from an area on the court where I trust him the most as well. Like, that's what Admiral does, is hit big threes late. We go to Grant when we need to go inside, and if we need a big three late, it's usually Turner or Admiral. I mean, even against Kentucky, Admiral passed up on the three, drove, sucked in Tyler Hero, and kicked it to Turner, who buried the three. I didn't have a problem with it. I know he missed it. I know it was early. I know everyone panicked. I know Iowa tied the game.
Why did you take him out there, though? Like, what?
Well, that's my question. Like, do we think at that point, or do you think that was Rick Barnes saying, you're not being benched for the shot, but we don't want you to pick up a dumb foul if we miss a shot and you get a foul going for a rebound or whatever?
I've seen that theory.
We need you for overtime. And then it was like, well, tell you what, keep Kyle in there because Kyle played well. Let's just see what happens. I don't know, man. It's weird.
I would love for a media member to have the stones to ask Rick Barnes at his media session today. I understand Admiral Schofield took himself, didn't want to play in the overtime. He wanted Kyle to have his spot, but why wasn't he on the floor for the final shot in regulation? And if Rick Barnes says,
because of the shot,
because
we didn't want a three there.
I mean, if Rick Barnes even says he had already said to leave Kyle in for that possession too, then, I mean, even if that's a lie, I'll be fine and move on. But like, that's That's what I really want to know. Like, what? It makes no sense. And you compound that with the fact that you didn't even try to get a really great look on the final possession. They went zone, and you didn't have any idea what to do. You just stood there and dribbled it, made one pass, and shot it. Now, you got a good look.
I was going
to
say that wasn't a bad look considering the circumstances.
It wasn't a bad look, but it still makes you have coaching questions when you don't really run a play at all. You just stand there and then make one pass and jack a shot up. And it was really bad defense.
And it was a three when you didn't need it.
Right. It was really bad defense from Iowa. It was the only reason Bone got a good look.
Sure.
Like, I mean, they should have had a guy matched up on Bone, so as soon as the pass starts to travel to him, they're closing out him.
Well, I thought it was weird because Turner waited until about 9 seconds to even do anything. I mean, he had the ball damn near half court. I mean, I don't want the shot to go up with 9 seconds, but I also thought we were going to run something.
Yeah.
So I was like, you're not giving yourself much time to run stuff. But it ended up, I mean, you got a good look. Bone just, he just missed.
I mean, if Purdue, Iowa, the Iowa freshman, I think, got the rebound and was afraid to call time. I think he forgot whether they had a timeout or not. Because you see him get the rebound, and he hesitates, and the senior runs over trying to call timeout, and they don't get it. But really, you took that shot almost too early. Because if dude that catches a rebound, jailing timeout right as he catches it, you're going to be facing the length of the court bomb to lose. And you know how the officials had already been. I wouldn't want to risk that.
But then, I mean, I'll counter that with if Grant gets the rebound, he's got a little bit of time to put it back up and get a score.
Sure.
I mean, I don't want that shot going up at the buzzer, but I'm with you. Maybe it was a second.
Maybe just start offense at you know, 12 seconds and then still take the shot at the same time.
That's what I'm saying.
But in a different place.
Like, I would like Bone to be able to – and Bone's probably watching Turner the whole time, but I would like Bone to catch that and then be able to – make a hesitation move or a drive or something instead of thinking, oh, I got to shoot this right now. And if you start your offense a little bit earlier, you're not quite as rushed. Because that's why he missed it, because he felt rushed.
I have another question about Turner, Bone, rolls, and rotation. We'll start hour three with that. Stick with us right here. It's Three and Out, brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union.